Welcome to the Enterprise Knowledge Cast, ranked by FeedSpot as the number one KM podcast in the world. This is a look into the world of knowledge management, information management, data management, and everything in between. Knowledge Cast is brought to you by Enterprise Knowledge, and I'm Zach Wall, founder and CEO of EK. Today, we're speaking with Daryl Wing, Director of Knowledge Management at Floor. Daryl, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Honored.
Absolutely. So, Daryl, the way that I always like to start this off, we'll jump right in by asking, what's your definition of KM? How do you describe knowledge management to the unindoctrinated?
That's the first great question. How I like to talk about knowledge management to the unindoctrinated is to think of this as a spectrum. At Floor, we don't like to think of knowledge as just on one piece of that spectrum. You know, on the one side, we've got the explicit side. On the other side, we've got the deep smarts. It is a spectrum, and we can address that spectrum with all manner of tools and processes and things like that. For Floor, though, it has perhaps a more specific definition. In fact, it was only a few years ago that we decided to ask this question of ourselves. We hadn't actually had a clear definition of this. And so how do we get this message out to our employees and indeed to our team? And what we came up with was a tagline that says, make the best decision every time. And the driving force behind that, I think, at Floor is that we're very project focused and projects are inherently uncertain. There's a lot of challenges and difficulties on every project that we face. And what we try to bring is project certainty through our KM message. So it's about driving an asking culture, trying to get people to stop and seek advice where they can and to share also what they know. And that's really the core piece of KM at Floor. It's about good decision making using good information and good knowledge.
That's a great definition. And there's a lot there that I want to pull apart. So first of all, let me praise your definition and how you've talked about the concept of a spectrum, because I think this is so important. For so long, and even in today's world, too many folks taking this very narrow definition of KM. Oh, it's about tacit knowledge capture, or it's only about unstructured content. The idea of using this term as a spectrum is one that I use myself, and I really like the fact that you've brought that in. Let's pick at that a little bit. How far do you take that, Daryl? When you talk about a spectrum, you mentioned the deep smarts, which I am inferring is kind of the tacit side, the stuff that's in your experts' heads. And you mentioned the explicit. When it comes to explicit, the trend now is to really look at even the full spectrum of explicit knowledge, meaning including data as part of the KM conversation. Is that what you're doing? Is that what Floor is doing? Or are you more focused on that traditional unstructured lot of content, your files, your documents?
All of the above. Obviously, we've cut our teeth on our communities of practice, which are called Knowledge Online. We were one of the fortunate companies that's been doing this for over 20 years now. So those paradigm shifts that you've seen in KM and the mistakes that were made, we made them. We've seen the pendulum swing from collecting this stuff, trying to create the library and memorialize all of our content and knowledge, you know, all the way through to networks. And now we're settling somewhere in between. But we do have an approach for a lot of that spectrum. So our communities of practice deal with, obviously, the basic stuff of just being able to get people to their best practices. But it does more. We have an information architecture behind those communities. We have a solid group of subject matter experts tied to that architecture so that when questions get asked about rotating equipment, for example, then the experts of rotating equipment are contacted and they have certain service level agreements to make sure that those answers are provided in a timely fashion. But you picked on the data side of things, and that's incredibly exciting. I am a technologist. I'm not an engineer by background. My background's in software development. So I love technology, but not just for technology's sake. I love the fact that this breakthroughs in knowledge graphs and in semantic AI and those things, the step change that we're seeing are just opening up capabilities that we only dreamed of a few years ago. We probably didn't even dream of them. We just didn't know it was possible. And that's what I love about the tech side of this is that it's opening up these possibilities and it's still helping us make those better decisions. It's trying to not just connect the dots better, but it's trying to create new dots within our content and our people that enable us to help people make better decisions.
That's well said. That's great. And there is a lot to talk about on the technology side for sure. Before we get there, I want to go back to a couple other phrases that you had within your definition. You talked about making Floor an asking culture and share what you know. And those are two incredibly important elements of KM, very much on the culture side, the people side. How have you encouraged that behavior, or how have you made that a reality within your organization?
Floor has a long-standing network of subject matter experts. So we do make it clear inside the organization that if you have the title of SME, then congratulations, it is a badge of honor. And here's the roles and responsibilities that come along with it. So there is a formalized piece of this and some expectations, as I said, that you will answer the questions in your area. You will hopefully share through blog posts and through our project experiences and lessons learned program information that you come across and experiences that you have. That subject matter expert network numbers somewhere around 13 to 1400, covering over 1,000 different categories, I suppose, of knowledge in the company and what we do. But on top of that actually sits a layer above, which is our fellows and senior fellows, which number about 75. So there is always an undertone that there are people with the knowledge there. Now, I'm not saying that people always come willingly to the table. We know that they solve problems every day on projects. They are heroes, all of them. Does that mean we get to hear about it all the time? No. And that's the constant battle, is making sure that us as brokers in the middle get to get wind of these great stories and the work that they do.
You mentioned formalizing the expectations around the subject matter experts and their activities, their knowledge sharing. How have you formalized those expectations?
They are covered in performance reviews. I wouldn't say that they are tied to them, unless, of course, you start talking about the fellows and the senior fellows. You have to be an expert to become a fellow, for example. You have to have demonstrated that you have shared your knowledge inside the institutional memory, which is knowledge online, okay? We all know that you share your knowledge anyway, but it needs to be done in a visible space. And there are expectations that you are a coach and you have those natural abilities to train and coach the next expert.
Got it. Now, you and I both know that if the knowledge were to be shared in a way that others could find it and act upon it, that the time of the SMEs would actually be freed up, because they would be sharing that knowledge once and then others would be able to access it, rather than likely what's happening today. They're sharing it over and over and over again to different channels and different people. How have you tried to get that message across? How do you try to communicate the return on investment or the value of KM to those who might be skeptical or are just really busy?
I don't have a good relationship with the whole ROI of KM, if I'm honest. I understand why it gets asked. We're reasonably fortunate in Floor where we don't get pressured for that. And neither should we. You know, I don't remember sort of seeing the ROI on my kids' schools, you know, or things like that. It's inherently, we know that this is the right thing to do. The conversation needs to change, as you said, as to how we do it. So it's not a matter of if we do it, it's just how well. And I would say that it's also the old rhetoric of getting people to write down and document what they know is also not accurate, I think, in our industry. What we find time and time again from our experts is that a question that's asked, say, in our forums just leads to more conversation. There's more clarifying questions. The context of the question is so important and perhaps so different that it would be, even if you could write it all down, no one's going to have the time, as I said, to read it. So what we use our system to do is to try and connect you to people so that you can have a conversation. Now, if experiences happen on your project for good or bad, we do like to capture some of that stuff and put that in front of the next project. But most of the time, I think SMEs would agree that it's not necessarily the same question being asked over and over again. It's got slight nuances, slight context changes that just warrants a conversation. So it's not like they're totally out of the equation.
So that to me sounds like KM for, as you said, better performance and more consistent performance, but also for learning and upskilling. What you're doing is introducing all of your staff to the opportunity to learn from these SMEs, to do the way they've done it, to ensure they don't make the same mistakes that have been done in the past, but also the analysis, to think through and question and learn in the same way that the SMEs have spent their entire careers refining. Am I getting that right as to what KM means within your organization?
Absolutely. And that's the, it sounds a bit cliche, but the communities of practice being the killer app. I couldn't agree more with that. And the fact that our Knowledge Online communities are still standing 22 years later and somebody joining the company as a new grad in process engineering or electrical engineering or whatever is in the same virtual space as somebody who's been doing it for 40 years and may have written a book on it. Mm-hmm. And you have that safety to ask the questions and to go back and see. That's one thing I think that is being lost going back to the tech is some of these new tools coming in, they're very social stream-based, whereas sometimes the fact that we can look back over 20 years worth of questions is not necessarily going to answer the question you have. But as you know, you'll get bits out of it. You'll see what the responses were. You'll see the questions that other people asked, as you said. Oh, I should be asking those questions too. Oh, that person's still here with us? Let me pick up the phone or walk down the hallway or get on a Teams call or something. Those communities just continue to serve learning 22 years later.
That's fantastic. And there are patterns there, as you point out, right? I mean, even if it's not the same question, it's the same way to ask the question or the same way to consider how you would solve the problem. You hit on something here. And to me, especially in today's job market, what you've created is more than just about performance at floor. It's also a recruiting tool. And I wonder if you're using it as such. And what I mean by that is, today's applicants have a lot of choices. There are a lot of places they could go. I imagine one of the most attractive things about going to Floor is that you have this network. When you walk in the door as perhaps a recent university grad, you're going to have the opportunity to learn from the best in the business. Does the organization talk about this as one of those reasons that somebody should choose Floor over one of your competitors?
Not as much as it should. One of the challenges we have, because we've been going so long, it's easy to think that you go from strength to strength with KM because you've been doing it longer, but that's just not true. Market forces, and boy, have we been through them recently and still going through them. They will make changes, and I'm sure you've heard from others in our industry and the oil and gas industry as well that 20 years ago, things were looking a lot better. Trying to get money to do the same investment today would be a harder conversation. But what we've heard anecdotally is people coming back, people who have left Floor. And then people have come back to Floor and said, wow, I really missed knowledge online. I missed having that safety net, a safe space to ask the questions and learn.
That to me is one of the next best conversations in knowledge management. We're increasingly seeing KM and learning merge into this broader force of how organizations perform and deliver the right information, the right knowledge, the right learning content to their team members. And in this, there's a huge competitive advantage. There's also this very cool, very attractive recruiting tool. The latest generations, those that are entering the workforce, are less motivated by salary and more motivated by opportunity and impact. And KM can really offer opportunity and impact in ways that I think are really compelling.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, one of our focus areas this year and next year will be on talking about data, but is collecting more data about what people know, just because that solves so many different issues that we're facing today. Recruitment is one, but mentoring and any kind of opportunity where you're getting experience on projects, but then being able to not just update your resume, so to speak, but go several levels deeper into that. Because what we're trying to do all the time, again, when we're asking people to make better decisions, is people need to find people that have done what you're about to do. And you think about that for a minute, and that's very hard to do, isn't it? What are you going to do? You're going to go through different systems and start looking at different keywords and then looking at a resume. And, you know, did I mention that I don't have any time to do any of this? So we have to connect the dots in a more intelligent way. And at the same time, we need people to stand up and take ownership of their online profiles and their skills profiles and get something out of it for them. We're just starting to sort of use some of this technology to do things on a scale which we haven't been able to do, like see who's similar to me in the organization. And then we don't just leave it at that. We have a good, we call it Coffee Connections. It's a randomized coffee trial. It's been going 6 years now, I think. That's all been voluntary and that's been great. But can we use this more intelligently? Can we start to group you with other people who are similar? Maybe we can use this to look at our knowledge pipeline and see, okay, we have experts retiring. Who's next? Does it always make sense that you use the person in the office or find somebody halfway around the world? We are a global company.
So let me repeat back what I just heard, because I think that this is, I'm seeing this in a few organizations, but it's pretty cutting edge. If you combine an understanding of expertise within the organization alongside a knowledge of the organization's demographics, you're going to be able to spot future gaps in your knowledge or future gaps in your expertise. Is that how you're thinking about this?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing that at a higher level for many years now. Mm-hmm. You know, the communities at Flora are led by the highest technical authorities. They are in charge of their knowledge map, for want of a better word. So, and sure. We have experts already. Despite having 1,400 experts, you know, we have another 15,000 people in our networks. You know, that whole long tail of knowledge and experience, especially when we move into new markets, which we are, where all of a sudden we're not looking for someone who's got 30 years experience because no one's got 3 years experience. We need to get better at finding people that have had that 6 month experience, you know, on a battery project. That's new and exciting to Flora. If we rely on existing traditional systems that no one has a purpose to go use, we're never going to know about it.
Well, that's right. And if you can do this at a sufficiently granular level, it's not just about going and recruiting for someone's replacement. It's about looking internally and saying, who can we upskill? Who can we train up? Who can we get matched as sort of mentor-mentee before these people leave? Around what topic should we have those SMEs and fellows developing more internal training and coaching so that we're not presented with this issue 5 years from now, right? There's a lot there.
Exactly. And the other nice thing is that, you know, it's so inclusive this way. What do we do otherwise? We pick people we know, not necessarily the people we don't know. And this is a fantastic leveler. And to try and give people opportunities in different countries or even within your same office that you just weren't considering, because this is where AI can help and data can help. We can put this on a map for you, and at least you can look at that and say, I didn't think about these people. I didn't realize that they had that level of knowledge already.
Daryl, that's such a cool point and such a neat way that KM can really, as you say, level the playing field into the future by looking at people's background and expertise paired with a million other factors and say, this isn't about who I know. It's not about who went to the same school as me or who got seconded to me on a particular project. It's looking across the entire field and identifying those that are ripe for the opportunity. Very cool. Let's talk about your own background. How did you get into the field? I need to invoke Obi-Wan here for a second and note that I heard a name I haven't heard for some time, that being Lotus Notes. I saw that show up on your CV a couple times. So you've got kind of an interesting path to KM. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, I'm not the only person, I think, in KM that has come through that company. But one of my first jobs was working for Lotus Development Corporation in the UK. I started my career as a help desk engineer doing desk side support. And then I looked at the inefficiencies, I think, that were there. They used to drive me mad. And I think that was a driving force for me to actually pick up our own product at the time and develop a system and realize, actually, this is quite easy to use. And it didn't just solve a business process issue of waste. It also dealt with what I look back now and to think we were actually doing knowledge management. It dealt with some human behaviors too. We would have people on the help desk. I'm gone long enough that no one's going to hunt me down. We had people that worked their butts off and we had people that didn't. Let me just put it that way. And once we could use these tools to not only force people to use them when they're logging help desk tickets, but then see who's being assigned. And then all that to be transparent. Almost overnight, we saw a dramatic improvement. We actually physically locked the doors as well so that people couldn't circumvent the system and tap us on the shoulder. But
well done.
But the lazy people weren't lazy anymore. Once they saw that they couldn't hide, and then we would store information. What did you do to fix that problem? I think it was a good introduction to, wow, how technology is fantastic, but I don't do that just for technology's sake. I do it because I'm interested in getting rid of inefficiencies. As I say to my family, I work very hard to be lazy. So if I see repetitive and redundancy, I'm drawn to try to remove that as much as I can because I just don't want to be doing that kind of work. But then I am a software developer, so I did move to the US and spent a lovely 12 years there. I do speak your language. And I had great fun in working with big companies, doing the same sorts of things, using this product and others to just make processes easier. Big companies like Boeing, Sony, Kaiser, Deloitte. And then while I was out there, I kind of fell into Flora in 2000, just when they'd started their knowledge management program. So all very exciting stuff.
So you were doing KM without it in your title. It sounds like you're one of those just cool folks that kind of does it naturally and looks for the opportunities to do it. But how did you come to get the actual position at Flora? I feel like there was a little bit of a jump there. Maybe you can give us a little bit more detail on that.
Yes. And as most things happen in life, I think by accident and not by design.
Fine.
And you know,
you just described the career of every person in the knowledge management field, by the way.
Precisely. my predecessor was quite well known. He was a senior VP in the company for knowledge management. And to get to a senior VP level in this company is no small feat. And then he left. And then I was tapped on the shoulder to take over the team. And I said, well, you're not going to make me a senior VP, are you? They said, no, just carry on at your low level. It's the same salary and you can call yourself the director of knowledge management, but it's all yours. And so that has been a massive challenge. And it still is. This has been going on 8 years. And as some of my KM friends will remind me, that organizational changes and management changes are a sure way to kill or hurt KM. And we've been no exception, really. The organization was big at some point. It got broken up. New organizations were formed. They took pieces away. And I think at some point, I think almost KM was seen as, and is still seen by some people, as custodians of a tool. You are the owners of knowledge online. That's what you do. And trying at our level to get the word out that we can do so much more and we should be doing so much more always keeps me up at night and makes me excited to start the next day and see what I can do.
So let's talk a little bit more about that, because our listeners are often interested in where knowledge management does sit within the organization. So you mentioned reorgs, and you mentioned perhaps the lack of understanding by some around the role of the knowledge management organization. Where does it sit within the organization? To whom do you report? How big's the team?
The KM organization sits under IT, perhaps by accident rather than design. The team used to be quite large. We used to have a good 13, 14 people. We're down to 5 or 6 now, with half of those sort of looking after the technology systems, probably two and a half full-time knowledge managers. And we have a full-time lessons manager as well to run the project experiences program.
So, Daryl, that's helpful to kind of understand where you sit within the organization. What falls within the responsibilities of your group versus what's potentially happening in learning and performance or in some other part of the organization?
So my organization is what we call the big K and big M. We look after knowledge online. We look after access to our best practices, the management of our SME network, the structure of our communities, managing project experiences. We are working to get sort of a project knowledge manager role established and formalizing some of that. The small KM, though, is quite pervasive in Floor. I would say a lot of small knowledge management is just not under my purview, but it's being done nevertheless. It's done in quite a few places. There are, you know, a lot of talent development programs. Floor University has been around for many, many years with online courses and learning. Each office will run its mentoring circles and things like that.
So that helps clarify this. What's coming next for you for the knowledge management, now talking about Big K and Big M group within Floor? What are your priorities? You mentioned this idea of dialing up the communities of practice to include almost like an expert finder, matchmaking type of technology. Is that what's next? Is there other elements on the roadmap that you want to share with us?
Yes, definitely. On the technology side, it's definitely looking into knowledge graphs more. We've made a start. It's certainly something we can build on. And we know that the more that we look into different systems and see what information is there, the more excited I get, to be honest. I uncovered one just the other month where I didn't realize that we were tracking the lead positions on some of our projects as of the last couple of years. Well, if you went to talk to HR about this, they said, no, we don't track that. Well, apparently we do. And it's that group over there. So having conversations with that group and saying, can we get a feed of that information? Because I sure would love to put that in front of people when they start a project and say, if we can give you the lead positions for similar projects, and the word similar is what keeps coming up time and time again.
Yes.
Right? And that is everything. You can peel that onion away all day. But that's where our focus is around looking at what is similar to you. Is it a similar based on the challenge, on the climate of where your site is going to be? Is it the clients? Is it the joint venture partnership? What is it? So there's many different lenses in which you can look at that, and we need data on all of it. And it's there. It's there. It just needs to be put together, and that's why we're excited about knowledge graphs. The other piece as well, as I mentioned, this sort of slight disconnect between where KM sits and probably where it should sit in an organization of our size is we have started a KM steering committee. So that was an easier conversation to have rather than say, is IT the best place for KM to be? So that hopefully will take pressure off people saying, yes, we'll take them, and just saying instead, yeah, I'm happy to attend a quarterly meeting, listen to what you guys are doing, and may hopefully get some support and just a general nod of their heads in the right direction. And finally, the other piece is always our mission on getting closer to projects. It's hard with us I say small team. I know I'm talking perhaps to people who say it's just me and you should be lucky. I am lucky.
Or me quarter time we get to, yeah.
Right, right. But creating the networks this year in each office so that we're not trying to sort of call up people and introduce ourselves each time, but strengthen the networks. And there's lots of people in the floor world that are happy to join networks that are interested in. And KM's a cool subject for them. We don't get a problem with adoption or people turning up to listen about the latest in knowledge management and technology, mainly because they want to see it coming, right? Getting that focal point on a project so that there's a representation, I suppose, distributed, but they have a connection into our team. And we get more business. We get more KM business. We have some great capabilities. And we run things like knowledge campaigns, for example, where the team can really use our tools behind the scenes to go find the people that might know about this and then bring them together in a virtual space and say, look, you've got a week, 2 weeks to answer this person's question. They are amazing tools. They're fantastic. Every time we run them, the sponsor says, this is amazing. I just don't understand why they're not knocking on my door saying, can you run four more for me? It's great at the time, but then again, the pressure of the project, you're onto other things. You don't really stop and think, wait a minute, I could use that again.
So I'd love to hear more about the knowledge campaigns. This is neat. I don't know that I totally understand it. Can you say more about what that is, how it comes to be, and how you facilitate it?
It is very simple. As I said, in our Knowledge Online communities, we have discussion forums and we manage these forums like a help desk. So when someone posts a question, the clock starts ticking. We see a dashboard. We make sure experts get on it if they haven't already. And that has worked extremely well. If you asked your question inside our chemical community or a mechanical community, the first responder is probably there on average within 8 hours, which is an amazing capability. What the knowledge campaign does is to take the same concept of that discussion forum, but outside the silo of a particular discipline and make it public. Very simply, we get some senior level sponsors, someone's face up there, a name, and say, we are looking for information about, you know, we're about to do this on a project. Are we going to run into problems or are we okay? Anything at all. And once I think people see that it's got a sponsor's name on it, and the requirement is the sponsor has to come back after the first person or second person has responded with a thank you, this is exactly what we're looking for, please keep this coming. Once people see the sponsor going, wow, this person's actually engaged and here's little old me with my idea and I think I can really help. And every time we run these, we do time bound these to about 3 weeks, but you will get probably 80% of the good stuff within a few days. In fact, the last one we ran was over a US holiday. And even then, on the US holiday, we had people from the States. I don't know, perhaps their holiday wasn't going great. They were checking knowledge online. But, you know, some people just have that.
Yeah, the right people do.
The right people have that. Yeah, exactly. So, again, a great tool in our toolbox. Maybe not everybody knows about it. And we always want to try more to have people use it.
What's neat about that, Daryl, we talk about KM in terms of people, process, content, culture, and technology, these five things coming together. And what you just described as your knowledge campaign touches on every single one of those elements, right? I mean, you've got this culture and getting senior leadership invested and shining a light on it. You've got the technology to capture the discourse. You've got the process of reviewing it and ensuring that the answers are being vetted and promoted, and certainly the people getting pulled in to encourage everybody to participate. I think that's very cool. That's really neat. I want to go back to the knowledge graph conversation because I loved the way that you described this. You said something really neat that I think a lot of people new to knowledge graphs miss, and that is asking the question, what's similar about a project? It's not just projects that are on the same topic. You said it could be a similar challenge or similar climate or geo or client or this or that. The idea that a big part of what's fun or exciting about knowledge graphs is that it doesn't have to be any one of those things or frankly, any many of those things. It can be a definition of similarity based on the individual and what they care about or are looking for. How have you approached that challenge? Because that gets complex really quickly.
It does. And I can testify to the mistakes we've already made on the complexity of that. A step perhaps that we didn't do, which we should have done, was to look deeper at what makes sense from a certain positions point of view. So we can't tackle every single layer to begin with, but when we're looking at putting a proposal together, then what's similar about this proposal to another proposal? Well, there's only going to be a certain group of people that will be able to answer that question. What about equipment or design issues? There's going to be a certain level, again, within engineering that will tell you, well, you know, we're looking at particular plant types and we have a list of plant types. So let's use that. We're happy to categorize based on that. Now, yeah, can you create your taxonomies off of those and have the clever technology classify content or do things according to that? Absolutely. But it's coming up with the information architecture. I keep saying that a lot of the practical KM is about information architecture. It really is. And having just everybody throw what they think into the mix doesn't actually help. And at the moment, there is no magic pixie dust that's going to automatically categorize these things beautifully for you. They need to make sense to the business and they need to be focused on real challenges. So people, for example, for us in engineering, it makes a difference if the project is in a cold climate versus hot climate. Right. Today, you can't type that in. What are you going to do when you search for cold climate? Well, you're going to find anything with the words cold and climate in it.
Right.
But
right.
What I want to know is that Sakhalin Island on the east coast of Russia, where we're currently at, that just gets included automatically.
Right.
So somebody's got to do the work. And someone's got to think about this stuff and figure out the information architecture where things can sit, but not be so rigid that, you know, it can't be flexible enough to see it from different angles. And that's what the beauty, as you know, about the graph is.
There's some great guidance in there. I mean, you mentioned ensuring that you're engaging the business for two really big reasons. One is to be able to ask the questions the way that they care about, but perhaps even more basically, just to make sure that you know what questions they want to ask and what problems they're trying to solve. So the use case is very different if you're writing a proposal versus planning a project. And as a taxonomist by trade, I will highly endorse your statement that information architecture is a huge piece of this. So I think that's spot on. Well done. Daryl, you've obviously come a long way in the field and you're doing a great job. What's the advice that you'd give to somebody interested in getting to where you've gotten, that's at the beginning of their career in KM or is looking to break into the field? What should they be doing?
Well, obviously read the subject. KM is, well, now we have a standard, so we're officially a discipline, right? So people are going to start taking us more seriously. Do the basic homework in reading the standard as a guide. There's not too many consultants in the business where you could pick up a few books and you'll get the general gist of KM. You know, I'm always fascinated when organizations are now creating KM for the first time, because obviously somebody in the company has had that thought that says we're missing something and I think this will help. And so if that was me with what I know now, it would be tying that person to a chair and saying, what is your measurement of success? Why am I here? You can read those books and you can go, as you know, 1,500 different ways in this subject. But if the next person who comes along says, that's not valuable to me, or I don't agree with quite what you're doing, and that's nice, but can we really afford to keep you? And you've got to have that information in your back pocket. You've got to have someone who's senior and accountable for this to hook onto. It's
excellent.
Great to do this from grassroots, and that's lovely. And you will always find people that want to embrace it, but it really does need that top level support.
Perfect. And that, in fact, bleeds into my last question for you. What must an organization do to be successful? And I imagine part of the answer is the same, ensuring that there is that senior level support and really commitment to knowledge management. What other advice do you have for the organizational listeners saying, how do we set up a program that's successful like Floor's?
Make someone very senior accountable. I would set expectations. That's probably the best advice, is to set expectations. Everybody wants to shoot for the moon, right? Until you realize just how hard it is to escape our gravity. And it's, again, coming from a technical background, I understand on the technical side, just the detail and just how hard things can be. Technology is made to look easy. It's not. It takes a lot. People want to ask for Google, right? And as you know, Google works off probably a team of about 300 taxonomists working very hard behind the scenes. You're not going to have that in your organization. So set expectations that you're not going to get it. On the other side as well is just having that ability to focus on knowledge and understand that knowledge is not information. And when all this tech comes to pass and when we've all got the latest AI and GPT-3 and all that great stuff into our systems, it's a race to the bottom, isn't it? I mean, what's going to be left? When you've now classified and everything's findable and you know where everybody is and what they know, what's left? What's really going to differentiate you from everybody else? And if you spend all your time getting distracted with IT projects, you're not going to have anything left for that. And that's where the gold really is.
Well said, and particularly well said by someone sitting in IT. I appreciate that. I want to ask you a bonus question because you mentioned it in passing. You mentioned the standard. I assume you're talking about ISO 30401, the relatively new KM standard. Are you using it at Fluor? Have you found value in it?
Only this year is someone on my team looking at that. And I've asked for a self audit to be done this year. It's not something I think that we need to get audited on. I think it's definitely something we can talk to our clients about and start a good conversation and say that we are compliant with this, even if it is internal audits only.
Good. Well, Daryl, I really appreciate it. Daryl Wing, Director of Knowledge Management at Fluor, obviously experiencing some great successes, and I wish you more into the future. For our listeners, thanks for joining us, and please join us at enterprise-knowledge.com to learn more about knowledge management and engage in the conversation. Daryl, thanks again.